marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kittens, the Milan's gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Bloodshed! We don't want no more bloodshed! So if you're not on a call with us, leave! Go home, go wherever you come from. This is our house. You can't come in our house killing us. That's what you're doing, because at the end of the day, when these people call these families, they tell them that their daddies and their mama's not coming home no more. I know how they feel, because I got the same phone call. No justice, no this, no peace. That's what we're calling for. Stop this killing. Stop this killing! Stop this killing!
Singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Bread and Roses Show on WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton, and streaming live at valleyfreeradio.org. My name is Elliot Tarry, your host for today's show. And the voice you just heard was the voice of Alton Sterling's aunt, Beda Abusela, in her grief, but also the horror at the shootings of police in Baton Rouge. And in the fullness of summer, at a time of great grief, turmoil, violence, conflict outside on our streets and in our inside our neighborhoods, outside our borders, on our TV screens, our families, and among friends, and conflict inside our own hearts and minds. Today's Bread and Roses show will be about trying to work some of that out and coming out a bit. Exposing more of myself than I usually do. Today's show is about Alton Sterling's death and Philando Castile's, but it's also about Mika Johnson and Gavin Long and their victims on the Dallas and Baton Rouge police forces and these recent events that have exposed the conflict between my mind and heart and political and spiritual convictions. So on today's show, I will indulge myself and ask your indulgence as I process out loud the conflict of peaceful nonviolent solutions to white supremacy, police violence, and summary executions of black men and women versus vengeance and violence as a solution in the struggle. Firstly, I would acknowledge that I am white, and that is no small factor in my conflict. And secondly, my inner thoughts and feelings are not often politically correct or socially acceptable, but nonetheless, they are real and I doubt uncommon among white radicals of my generation and black men and women of many generations. I, like many in my generation, was deeply impacted by the civil rights and black power movements of the 1960s and 70s. Stokely Carmichael, Eldridge Cleaver, Bobby Seale, Angela Davis, and of course Malcolm X were the voices we heard and embraced. Militancy was the order of the day. But the day was not won. Quite the opposite. Assassinations, infiltrations, and incarcerations quashed revolutionary spirit in the streets, but not in the heart. So when I witnessed the endless tale of unarmed black men and women being brutalized, shot, and killed over a decade and a half from Amadou Diallo to Alton Sterling and Philando Castile by thuggish police, I feel rage, a rage that sparks violent fantasies of revenge. Now, I am respectful of police, and I even helpful whenever I can be, and I call them officer, but I still fear them. And when I see videos of armed and armored helmeted police lines attacking Baton Rouge Black Lives Matter protesters, peacefully protesting, my rage goes ballistic. And I become grateful I don't have an AK-47. Now, I know this may surprise many friends because I spend a lot of time in ceremony praying for peace and justice. I also do personal rituals to release that rage from my body and mind. But the voice of Malcolm still resonates in my heart and ear. And to that, my heart says, right on, Malcolm. Right on, Malcolm. So what I intend today is to air audio clips from the week that was an attempt at national healing and grief on both sides of the divide, but also from the past, that past that still resonates. So let us begin with Malcolm X. And we'll be back after this.
I'd like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a Black Revolution and a Negro Revolution? First, what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolutions, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. Come on in. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. You bleed when the white man says bleed. You bite when the white man says bite. And you bark when the white man says bark. I hate to say this about us, but it's true. How are you going to be nonviolent in Mississippi as violent as you were in Korea? How can you justify being nonviolent in Mississippi and Alabama when your churches are being bombed and your little girls are being murdered, and at the same time you're going to get violent with Hitler and Tojo and somebody else that you don't even know?
If violence is wrong in America, violence is wrong abroad. If it's wrong to be violent, defending black women and black children and black babies and black men, then it's wrong for America to draft us and make us violent abroad in defense of her. And if it is right for America to draft us and teach us how to be violent in defense of her, then it is right for you and me to do whatever is necessary to defend our own people right here in this country.
This is the voice of Malcolm X speaking in the early 60s, mid-60s. Revolution. Revolution. The name, the voice you heard at the beginning under the our theme song was the voice of Alton Sterling's aunt, Vida Abasela, speaking through her grief for peace against the shooter in Baton Rouge, who was Gavin Long. Malcolm X, the speech was titled You're Afraid to Bleed, a speech I have aired on the Bread and Roses show in the past, and a speech which Gavin Long, the man who reportedly shot and killed three Baton Rouge police officers, was also apparently familiar with, where he had quoted from it on social media videos. And that makes my heart heavy. Heavy with conflict, guilt, shame, and a sense of hypocrisy, for the reality is I would never pick up a gun against police, and I don't need to, because I'm white. But yet, some part of me still thinks Malcolm's right. I also think he didn't mean for black nationalists to start ambushing cops. I think he had envisioned something closer to the Black Panthers. But I need desperately to square this with my path of peace, spirituality, compassion, compassionate understanding, and knowledge that unity is paramount for us to survive as a democracy. So I listened after a week to the memorial service at a Christian church in Baton Rouge where Jesse Jackson and others spoke. And I'll share some remarks now by the Reverend Al Sharpton, who was the featured orator at that service for Alton Sterling.
First, let me thank the family for being an example and a model to this nation. Despite the fact that a grave injustice has happened, you have held your heads high with great dignity and with a example of what this nation should be. But let us not beat around the bush. This is wrong. I don't care how saved you are, how holy you are. Wrong is wrong. And some of us are so busy trying to get past this that you can't get past it until you deal with it. Wrong must be corrected and the wrong must be held accountable. Tomorrow morning, I'm leading a march in New York. 2 years ago Sunday, they choked a man to death on video, selling Lucy cigarettes in front of a store. 2 years later, they shoot a man selling CDs in front of a store. We have got to stop going from funeral to funeral, and America needs to deal when wrong is wrong, and whoever does the wrong needs to pay the price for doing wrong. Well, Reverend, what do? You do with any other crime. A couple of days ago, President Obama had 33 of us at the White House. And we sat there and talked back and forward. And some of the law enforcement talked about how it is a very frightful thing that when they leave home in the morning, they don't know if they're coming home. And they are right. And we should not have police live like that. But I said to them, let me show you where the difference is. The president's right. We are not as divided. But let me tell you where the division comes. The division comes when some are killed wrong and the killers are held accountable. And when others are killed wrong and you find ways to excuse it. Nobody condones killing cops. Nobody stands for what happened in Dallas. But I want to see some of you stand up in Louisiana and say, we think it is wrong when cops do wrong. We want healing, but you've got to have one standard of healing. From Eric Garner, then into Ferguson, Missouri, then into the case in North Charleston, and on and on and on. Are you trying to tell me out of all these cases, nobody was wrong?
Come on now.
It's not just young and old. Alton was 37 with five children. Yes. Eric Garner was a grandfather. Tamir Rice was 12 years old. Nobody was wrong.
Come on.
I don't care what any training or any calculus does. We will never stop this until law enforcement, who are mostly good, but until the bad ones know that they will go to jail like anybody else that commits a crime. If someone commits a crime in our community, some turn them in. Reverend, most cops are good. Good, then good cops need to stand up. And good cops need to say, you bad cops that are giving us a bad name need to go where anybody else that does bad goes. 1953, before I was born, there was a meeting and a preacher right here in Baton Rouge named Reverend T.J. Jemison. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And T.J. Jemison and the people in Baton Rouge had the first bus boycott, even before Montgomery and Rosa Parks. This is the birthplace where it started. And this is the birthplace we come back to today.
Yes.
Dr. King and Dr. Abernathy and others studied what Dr. Jemison did in Baton Rouge, where they boycotted the buses. We need to now, and I see Bishop, some real fighters out here, Reverend Yearwood is here and others are here. We need to have a summit in Baton Rouge and start a national boycott against those that are financing these laws that do not hold police accountable like everybody else. We need to stop financing those that hold us in contempt. You don't have to march about it. You don't have to debate about it. We can just keep our money in our pocket. We learn how to boycott in Baton Rouge, and we're going to meet in Baton Rouge, and the same companies that back these laws that are discriminatory from Gardner to Alton, we're going to come out and close them down by keeping our money in our pocket. You may not like us, but you won't do it with our money in your pocket. It's time to go back to withdrawing our dollars. I mean, they say to me, well, Reverend, well, the slogans, we say no justice, no peace. That's not threatening. That's saying you can't have peace without justice. The minister's right. You can have quiet without justice, but you can't have peace without justice. Peace is when everybody knows that they will have the same results. Well, I don't like the Black Lives Matter slogan. Let me tell you, first of all, you don't understand what they're saying. Those three young ladies that started that phrase as we were coming out of Trayvon Martin, we're not trying to convince you we matter. We know we matter. We're not asking for you to affirm we matter. We know we matter. Your system treats us like we don't matter. So when we say we matter, we're telling you that your justice system must measure up to our mattering. That's why we march. That's why we block highways. Because we matter. Because Alton matter. We can stop this nation. Because we matter. We don't have no inferiority complex. We have an inferior judicial system that does not protect all of its citizens equally. That's what this is about, one system that operates fairly for everybody. We're not anti-police, we're anti-wrong. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities, wickedness in high places. It's wicked to just let a string of killings go and nobody pay. It's wicked to sit up and know you're covering for institutional iniquity. It's wicked that you want ID for us to vote. You want the president's birth certificate, but you don't even want background checks for people to buy guns. It's wicked. For you to tell people that are hurting to don't speak to their pain. It's wicked when young folks, black and white, march down the road and you lock them up because one of their feet may hit the edge. But you can't lock up people that shoot people in the back in North Charleston on video. It's wicked. We're not fighting police. We're fighting wickedness. We're fighting wrong. Shirley, the governor said the other day at the White House to me, has she fought against gun violence? She told me on my TV show Sunday about her sisters and her raised in Alton. This is a solid family. Y'all busy running around. I'm so glad the cousin said what he said, trying to find division, trying to get a story. The story is that this man should not be here at his own funeral. Quit trying to mess with the family and mess with the injustice that we hear about. Five children, wickedness. This is the role. Preachers, Reverend Raymond, all of us need to be standing together. Let me say that the reason we can make it, I want the authorities in Louisiana to understand this. The reason that we can sustain through all we've been through. I looked at the president the other day, everything they put him through. Can you imagine asking the president of the United States for his birth certificate, voting against him when he get your mama health care? And anybody, especially us, that say anything about him, put him all over TV. And then Red Mal, y'all just like him. Yeah, I do like president. He's been the best president since I've been alive. Doesn't mean I have to agree with everything, but I know what we had. But can you imagine the insult it is that we've got to go through all of that and still endure it? But the reason why we endure it is we've got a weapon that you can't take from us. I got two daughters, and I tell them they're in the technology and the social media, and I tell them all the time, Sister Sandra, that there's some things in life that you are not going to be able to Google up the answer. Cameron, you're going to face challenges that technology ain't going to be able to explain to you. But the reason you can make it anyhow, the reason why your great-grandmama made it, is there's something beyond their understanding. When I was growing up, they tell me to keep hope in what we were doing, but there have been things I faced that hope ran out. Mr. Robert, there were things that my hopes were dashed. But I'm glad, Sister Shirley, they raised me in the church, because I've got another gear in my engine. When hope runs out, then faith kicks in. Faith is the substance of things hopeful, the evidence of things unseen. Faith is when the doctors give up, but you hold on for another doctor. Faith is when you got a pile of bills and no money, but you say he will provide all of my needs. Faith is when your friends walk out, when your loved ones turn their back. But I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me now. We come this far by faith, leaning on the Lord, trusting in his holy word. He never, from the outhouse to the White House, he never failed me yet.
All right. That was the Reverend Al Sharpton speaking in Baton Rouge at a memorial service for Alton Sterling, who was murdered by police. Now, I'm not Christian, but I am grateful that the families in grief can turn somewhere for comfort and strength, and I am moved by the sight of strong black men and women exhibiting love and strength of character and healing at a time of need. It brings perspective, insight, and it's humbling. Let's take a break right here and listen to some Stevie Wonder. Welcome back to the Bread and Roses Show. I'm Elliot Tarry, and that was Stevie Wonder with Sting and a song titled Fragile, performed live, that was. And that captures the zeitgeist this past couple of weeks, fragility of mind, body, body politic, and democracy. It all does seem to be coming apart, and definitely what is fragile today is individual and collective sanity. The young man, Gavin Long, who ambushed, military style, the police in Baton Rouge, was an ex-Marine suffering with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. He had served tours of duty in Iraq and was decorated. Later, he traveled to Africa, where, according to a Washington Post article, began to rediscover his roots and also had a spiritual awakening. He returned and began teaching and writing about spiritual awakening through fasting, cleansing, as a means of opening the third eye. And I must say, that sounds quite a lot like me at 27 years of age. The Post article researched his travels to Dallas during the shootings there and elsewhere, where he was preaching to the black communities of the needs for education and cleansing as he passed out his book. Needless to say, this profile is hardly congruent with the military assault on police. Fragile. But as we continue in our search for unity, I'd like to play an excerpt from President Barack Obama's oration at the memorial service in Dallas for the 5 slain police officers. This is President Barack Obama.
Now, I'm not naive. I have spoken at too many memorials during the course of this presidency. I've hugged too many families who've lost a loved one to senseless violence. And I've seen how a spirit of unity born of tragedy can gradually dissipate, overtaken by the return to business as usual, by inertia and old habits, and expediency. I see how easily we slip back into our old notions because they're comfortable. We're used to them. I've seen how inadequate words can be in bringing about lasting change. I've seen how inadequate my own words have been. And so I'm reminded of a passage in John's Gospel. Let us love not with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. If we're to sustain the unity we need to get through these difficult times, if we are to honor these 5 outstanding officers who we lost, then we will need to act on the truths that we know. And that's not easy. It makes us uncomfortable. But we're going to have to be honest with each other and ourselves. We know that the overwhelming majority of police officers do an incredibly hard and dangerous job fairly and professionally. They are deserving of our respect and not our scorn. And when anyone, no matter how good their intentions may be, paints all police as biased or bigoted, we undermine those officers we depend on for our safety. And as for those who use rhetoric suggesting harm to police, even if they don't act on it themselves, well, they not only make the jobs of police officers even more dangerous, but they do a disservice to the very cause of justice that they claim to promote. We also know that centuries of racial discrimination, of slavery and subjugation, and Jim Crow, they didn't simply vanish with the end of lawful segregation. They didn't just stop when Dr. King made a speech or the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act were signed. Race relations have improved dramatically in my lifetime. Those who deny it are dishonoring the struggles that helped us achieve that progress. But we know But America, we know that bias remains. We know it. Whether you are black or white or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or of Middle Eastern descent, we have all seen this bigotry in our own lives at some point. We've heard it at times in our own homes. If we're honest, perhaps we've heard prejudice in our own heads and felt it in our own hearts. We know that. And while some suffer far more under racism's burden, some feel to a far greater extent discrimination's sting. Although most of us do our best to guard against it and teach our children better, none of us is entirely innocent. No institution is entirely immune. And that includes our police departments. We know this. And so when African Americans from all walks of life, from different communities across the country, voice a growing despair over what they perceive to be unequal treatment, when study after study shows that whites and people of color experience the criminal justice system differently, so that if you're black, you're more likely to be pulled over or searched or arrested, more likely to get longer sentences, more likely to get the death penalty for the same crime. When mothers and fathers raise their kids right and have the talk about how to respond if stopped by a police officer, yes, sir, no, sir, but still fear that something terrible may happen when their child walks out the door, still fear that kids being stupid and not quite doing things right might end in tragedy. When all this takes place more than 50 years after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, we cannot simply turn away and dismiss those in peaceful protest as troublemakers or paranoid. We can't simply dismiss it as a symptom of political correctness or reverse racism. To have your experience denied like that, dismissed by those in authority, dismissed perhaps even by your white friends and co-workers and fellow church members again and again and again, it hurts. Surely we can see that, all of us. We also know what Chief Brown has said is true, that so much of the tensions between police departments and minority communities that they serve is because we ask the police to do too much and we ask too little of ourselves. As a society, we choose to underinvest in decent schools. We allow poverty to fester so that entire neighborhoods offer no prospect for gainful employment. We refuse to fund drug treatment and mental health programs. We flood communities with so many guns that it is easier for a teenager to buy a Glock than get his hands on a computer or even a book. And then we tell the police, you're a social worker, you're the parent, you're the teacher, you're the drug counselor. We tell them to keep those neighborhoods in check at all costs and do so without causing any political blowback or inconvenience. Don't make a mistake that might disturb our own peace of mind. And then we feign surprise when periodically the tensions boil over. We know those things to be true. They've been true for a long time. We know it. Police, you know it. Protesters, you know it. You know how dangerous some of the communities where these police officers serve are. And you pretend as if there's no context. These things we know to be true. And if we cannot even talk about these things, if we cannot talk honestly and openly, not just in the comfort of our own circles, but with those who look different than us or bring a different perspective, then we will never break this dangerous cycle. In the end, it's not about finding policies that work. It's about forging consensus and fighting cynicism and finding the will to make change. Can we do this? Can we find the character as Americans to open our hearts to each other? Can we see in each other a common humanity and a shared dignity and recognize how our different experiences have shaped us? And it doesn't make anybody perfectly good or perfectly bad. It just makes us human. I don't know. I confess that sometimes I too experience doubt. I've been to too many of these things. I've seen too many families go through this. But then I am reminded of what the Lord tells Ezekiel. I will give you a new heart, the Lord says, and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. That's what we must pray for, each of us. A new heart, not a heart of stone, but a heart open to the fears and hopes and challenges of our fellow citizens. That's what we've seen in Dallas these past few days. And that's what we must sustain. Because with an open heart, we can learn to stand in each other's shoes and look at the world through each other's eyes. So that maybe the police officer sees his own son in that teenager with a hoodie who's kind of goofing off, but not dangerous. And maybe the teenager will see in the police officer the same words and values and authority of his parents. With an open heart, we can abandon the overheated rhetoric and the oversimplification that reduces whole categories of our fellow Americans, not just to opponents, but to enemies. With an open heart, those protesting for change will guard against reckless language going forward. Look at the model set by the five officers we mourn today. Acknowledge the progress brought about by the sincere efforts of police departments like this one in Dallas. And embark on the hard but necessary work of negotiation, the pursuit of reconciliation. With an open heart, police departments will acknowledge that just like the rest of us, they're not perfect. That insisting we do better to root out racial bias is not an attack on cops, but an effort to live up to our highest ideals. And I understand these protests, I see them, they can be messy. Sometimes they can be hijacked by an irresponsible few. Police can get hurt. Protesters can get hurt. They can be frustrated. But even those who dislike the phrase Black Lives Matter, surely we should be able to hear the pain of Alton Sterling's family. When we hear a friend describe him by saying that whatever he cooked enough for everybody, that should sound familiar to us, that maybe he wasn't so different than us. So that we can, yes, insist that his life matters. Just as we should hear the students and co-workers describe their affection for Philando Castile as a gentle soul, Mr. Rogers with deadlocks, they called him, and know that his life mattered to a whole lot of people of all races, of all ages, and that we have to do what we can without putting officers' lives at risk, but do better to prevent another life like his from being lost. With an open heart, we can worry less about which side has been wronged and worry more about joining sides to do right. Because the vicious killer of these police officers, they won't be the last person who tries to make us turn on one another.
President Barack Obama, at a memorial service in Dallas, with a foretelling on his last remarks of what would happen in Baton Rouge. Memorial service for slain police officers, and again, I found it helpful, even though not Christian, and I couldn't listen to this when it was aired originally. I just went back to listen. I'm not a Christian, but to witness this community's method of healing and processing grief, also the president's skill at merging both sides in the rhetoric of unity and family, it was quite compelling. And even as I know that, the white supremacist talking heads were actively spewing hate, even as he spoke, and they still are, it really helped me to understand the power of unity and his message. But I think the person that touched me the most was the Dallas police chief, David Brown, who grabbed the nation's attention as a strong, intelligent, and powerful leader, giving updates during the horrors on the streets of Dallas. Here are his remarks at the Dallas Memorial. This is Dallas police chief, David Brown.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. When I was a teenager and started liking girls, I could never find the right words to express myself. And after a couple of words, they'd just walk away, leaving me figuring out what do I need to do to get a date. And so being a music fan of 1970s rhythm and blues love songs, I put together a strategy to recite the lyrics to get a date. So for girls I liked, I would pull out some Al Green or some Teddy Pendergrass or some Isley Brothers, and I'd recite the lyrics to their love songs. But for people I loved, if I fell in love with a girl, oh, I had to dig down deep, get some Stevie Wonder. To fully express the love I had for the girl. So today, I'm going to pull out some Stevie Wonder for these families. So families, close your eyes and just imagine me back in 1974 with an afro and some bell bottoms and wide collar. We all know sometimes life's hate and troubles can make you wish you were born in another time and place. But you can bet your lifetimes that, and twice as double, that God knew exactly where he wanted you to be placed. So make sure when you say you're not in it, but not of it, you're not helping to make this earth a place sometimes called hell. Change your words into truth, and then change that truth into love. And maybe your children's grandchildren and their great-great-grandchildren will tell them, I'll be loving you until the rainbow burns the stars out of the sky. I'll be loving you until the ocean covers every mountain high. I'll be loving you until the dolphin flies and the parrots live at the sea. I'll be loving you until we dream of life and life becomes a dream. I'll be loving you until the day is night and night becomes the day. I'll be loving to you until the trees and seas up, up, and fly away. I'll be loving you until the day that 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 is 4. I'll be loving you until the day that is the day that are no more. I'll be loving you until the day the earth starts turning right to left. I'll be loving you until the earth, just for the sun, denies itself. I'll be loving you until Mother Nature says her work is through. I'll be loving you until the day that you are me and I am you. Now, ain't that loving you? Until the rainbow burns the stars out of the sky. Ain't that loving you? Until the ocean covers every mountain high. And I've got to say, always, I'll be loving you always. And there's no greater love than this, that these five men gave their lives for all of us. It is my honor to introduce to you the President of the United States of America, President Barack Obama. Thank you.
Chief Spiller, clergy, members of Congress, Chief Brown, I'm so glad I met Michelle first because she loves Stevie Wonder.
All right. He just had to get his joke in, too. First, you heard Dallas Police Chief David Brown quoting lyrics from a song by Stevie Wonder titled As, and then a little joke by President Barack Obama. Now, I said Chief Brown's remarks touched me in the most of anything, and here's why. That song happens to be woven into my heart. I believe it is the perfect expression of love from an avatar, or what is called an enlightened being, to humanity. And the thought that a chief of police in Texas and I could share the same song deep in our hearts gave me hope. It gave me hope. And I, like Chief Brown, have often wanted to send that expression of love to all my beloved friends. So I will. To all my relations, here's Stevie Wonder.
As around the sun, the earth no seats revolving, and the rosebuds know the bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind sure that I'll be loving you always. As now can't reveal the mystery of tomorrow.
Stevie Wonder, and that about does it for this edition of Bread and Roses Show. Do stay tuned for Democracy Now!
As we come marching at the dawn of the day.